Okay, so the thing is, we were doing this thing in Hilchos Tshuva Perek Shmini, right? The thing about Olam Haba, right? So the Rambam said we had a sort of like something that was like a little off, right? The Rambam said that Hatova Hatzfuna LaTzadikim Hu Chayim Haba. Right? Then the way he described it, he says, Chayim she'ein mavisi mahem, v'hatov she'ein ima ra. Right? It's a life that has no death, and a good that has no ra. Right? So we said a simpler way to say that, which is actually the way the Rambam says it later on, is a life that's infinite, life that doesn't end, and a tov that doesn't end. Right? Why do you have to say a tov that does not have evil? Right? And a life that does not have death. Okay, so we said that what he's trying to teach you is that it's that the pshat is that the reason why it's a life without death is because it's a different kind of life. Okay, it's qualitatively different kind of life. The life on this world must have death. It's a life that always has death because a physical life has to have death. Okay. And a physical good must, of necessity, bring with it ra. Okay, because any physical enjoyment has defects, has all kinds of problems in the physical world, it causes you ra. Okay, so if you're in the physical world, any tov, by definition, brings with it a ra. Okay, so that's why the Rambam says that there's another type of tov, she'eini mara. It means it's a qualitatively different type of tov. And that tov does not partake of evil at all. Okay? Right? And that life does not partake of misa, because it's a non-physical life. Okay, so a non-physical life doesn't partake of misa. Okay? So that's what we said last time, right? That was the basic idea. Okay? But then the Rambam goes on. And he says like this. He says, okay, Schar HaTzadikim Hu Sheyizku L'Noam Zeh. Okay? V'yiyeh B'tova Zeh. Okay, so the reward of the Tzadikim is that they are Zocha to this Noam and this Tov. Okay? So he gives two descriptions. Noam and Tov. Does anybody want to offer perhaps a translation? Why? What's the difference between Noam and Tov? Or is it just flowery language? I mean, I'm not against flowery language, but
put my money on it that it's not flowery.
That it's not flowery language. Okay. So, what's the difference between Noam and Tov? Pleasant and good, right? I mean, just if you're going to just translate it loosely, I mean, I would say Noam probably translates pleasant, and Tov is good. So they both sound pretty good. I mean, I'm not saying either is bad, but what would you say?
No, I was going to say pleasant and good.
Okay, pleasant and good, right? So, yeah.
I don't know, I'm just kind of going on a little bit, but maybe Noam is like kind of personal pleasure.
Okay.
Good. Very good. But Tov is like more objective good.
Good. Very good. Right? You can have something that's an objective good, okay? But can a person partake of that good? It depends. Sometimes you have something that's very good, a very good way of life, and a person tries to attain that way of life, but he has problems. He can't relate to that, right? There are things in his constitution which prevent him from partaking of that good, okay? So it may be good, but for him it's not pleasant, okay? So what it means is, in the next world, it's in this world, sometimes you have a good that is very good if a person can get it, okay? But in the next world, what he's saying is, that type of good, the enjoyment of chachma, is something that a person can have fully, okay? It will be pleasant to him, which means that there is nothing in him in the next world that will be contrary to that good. In other words, his whole nature will be in line with enjoying the good of Chachma, the enjoyment of Chachma. Okay, so that's what it means, known. It's an objectively the greatest good, and it's something that will be the that he can personally partake of. Yeah.
So in other words, like Toad would be you're struggling through something temporarily, even though it's good for you. Like at the time,
that's
but,
right.
But you're not enjoying the process.
That's
but,
right.
But I guess all Mamba the norm is like there's no like. You're not being like impeded.
You're not being impeded.
Yeah.
Now, as in this world, you're impeded because a person realizes, let's say that the learning is the greatest thing, the life of the Torah is the greatest thing, but it's not so simple. A person has to struggle to become a Talmid Chacham. Right? There's things in his nature that he has to perfect. Okay. So therefore, it may be the greatest thing, but till he gets there, not so pleasant. Right? It might not be the most pleasant thing till you get there. Okay, but once you get there, then it's a very nice life. Okay, but he's saying in the next world you have both really. You have the nice life. It's a nice life, and it does not involve a struggle. Okay, as your nature is such in the next world that there is no struggle.
Okay, so you don't have the your type of.
So I was going to ask you.
Physical desires and stuff like that are the actors, they pull you in this world to see the greater good.
They take you away. That's right. I was going to ask you how could we account for the fact that in this world everything's a struggle and in the next world there's no struggle?
Yeah. So are we now saying that that like Tov is a relative term, meaning you need bad in order to have good? And then with pleasant, that's like a standalone goodness. Like
well, the pleasant is more how you relate to the good. Sometimes you can have a good, but it's not pleasant for you because of your makeup, not because there's something lacking in the good. Okay, because your makeup doesn't lend itself. You have something in your nature that's pulling you away.
I get what you mean. Could you say an example?
I'll give you an example. If I had one, I'd give it. well, let's say here, what we're talking about, learning. Okay? Why is learning sometimes difficult for a person? I mean, why is it difficult? Because a person has distractions. Well, one thing is, he may not have familiarity with the learning. So he doesn't have enough contact with learning to see the enjoyment. He never learned. So to him, learning means sitting in a classroom and having, I hope I'm not describing the present situation, sitting in a classroom and having a boring, you know, a teacher, boring, you know, giving him information that's totally useless to him, or he sees no value, no enjoyment in it, right? So that's what a person is brought up with, classroom situation. So that's a painful thing. So learning, when in his mind, he associates with that experience. Okay, so if you can tell the guy how enjoyable learning is, he's not going to know what you're talking about. Okay, but if a person then progresses and, you know, comes to a yeshiva that presents ideas, not in a authoritative and, you know, way that's just, you know, pushing them down your throat, but shows you logic behind ideas, and a person sees, wow, this is nice idea. You see, then a person understands what it means to enjoy an idea. Okay, then in his mind, the idea of learning occupies a different place. It doesn't occupy the place of torture; it occupies the place of relaxing and coming to a new realization that you never had. Okay, or seeing a new idea. It's an enjoyable thing. Okay? So if a person has that experience, so then he knows what learning is. He knows that it's an enjoyable activity. Okay? But sometimes that is not enough to remove any barrier to learning. Okay? Sometimes even after that experience, okay, now he knows learning is a fun thing, but then he finds other impediments. He finds that it's still hard for him to sit down and learn because he has other distractions. Okay? So the source of impediment to learning is because we are really composed of a dual nature, right? The way we're built from two different essences. Okay, one part of our nature is physical, right? We have animalistic drives, okay? So part of us gains satisfaction from physical pleasures, okay? In opposition to that, you have another part of your nature, which is totally removed from the physical and enjoys comprehending things that are not physical at all. Okay? There's a part of your nature that finds enjoyment from thinking about things that are not physical. I mean, just to take a simple example, a number. A person studies math. He enjoys seeing new ideas in math. Okay? Now, nobody ever saw a number. It doesn't exist in the physical world. I mean, you can see objects, but somehow when you see those objects, your mind all of a sudden goes, 1 second, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Where'd that come from?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. That's something that's purely non-physical. Okay? So it's something that only goes on in your head. Okay? And you're able to perceive these ideas that really work. They're not just crazy fantasies that you made up in your mind, because when you take those things and then you manipulate them and create certain structures, certain ideas from them, all of a sudden you notice you can predict where a certain planet's going to be on a certain day at a certain second. How's that? Right? So it must be that you're picking up something that's real. Okay? But that real thing is not a material object. It's not material. So you have another part of your nature which is tied to and has a tremendous desire for those things, those ideas. Okay? Now these two parts to your nature really conflict with each other. Okay? Because they're two different drives and two different enjoyments. Okay, let's enjoy the music a little, hey? It's not ideas, but hey, might as well enjoy it.
It's going to be sort of obvious, but it's not like you have to completely separate like the physical world and like the non-physical, because even like right now, like learning, talking about ideas, but when if you're eating or whatever, that can kind of enhance the experience of learning itself, because that's in your nature, but you're directing it towards something.
That's right.
More.
Right.
So it's not like you have just to clarify, like it's not like you have to separate the two. All like there might be, you might think like, oh, like while I'm involved in learning, like I can't be involved in anything within my physical nature. Like I have to separate the two.
That's true.
But it seems like that you have to know nature, and like that you should use the physical to
Yes, sir. In other words, what you're saying is these are really two different worlds, but I can't, since I'm part of me is physical, since I have a physical component, I can't say, well, I'm going to disregard the physical and just involve myself in the mental.
Right. So, and I would say that would
not possible.
Yeah, but and also like it could take away from your potential in the learning, because it could even put you in a better state of mind.
That's right.
That's
right.
That's it.
Right. That's part of your nature. So you have to satisfy that part of your nature. If you don't satisfy that part of your nature, then the other part's not going to work. Right? The mental part cannot work if the physical part is deprived.
Right.
Not possible. Right? But nevertheless, even though you must satisfy that part of your nature, it definitely impedes the other part. You see? Because if you didn't have that, right, then you could focus all of your energies to the other part.
Right.
In other words, what we're saying is man has that. So now your energy must be split. Okay? Now if a person would try not to split his energies and direct all his energies towards the mental and disregard the physical, that would not be correct.
Right. Because it's just simple. There's a whole there's a reason why God created that way in the first place.
That's right. But nevertheless, be that the case, the fact still remains that the fact that a person has to divert himself to the physical definitely takes away from the mental. Right? That is definitely the case. Okay. So really, that's the source of what the person has to struggle with. When the person is trying to direct himself and involve himself in the life of Chachma, you see, that's the other factor that is always an impediment. Okay, there's no way to get around it. That's why in this world, it is not Noam. It's impossible to be Noam, because a person always has the other element. Okay, but the Rambam is saying, in the next world, that's a qualitatively different situation. Over there, the person doesn't have the other part of his nature. He only has the abstract part of the nature. The nature that desires MS, that desires Chachma. Okay? So in that world, the person is able to function without impediment. Okay? That's the Noam. In other words, in this world, you may have the Tov, but you don't necessarily have the Noam. Okay, you have the MS, but you're split. You're a divided creature. You see, in the next world, you're not split. So if you're not split, so then you can understand very simply, very clearly, how if you have the Tov, it's also Noam. Because you're not split. Okay? Yeah.
I'm not sure if this is a tangential question or not. I think, like, people's in different enjoyments of ideas are different. Like, not, like one person's going to enjoy an idea for like this particular reason because it's going to relate, but that's kind of like an abstract like type of thing. Like, you know, they're gonna relate to it in a different way, but that's kind of seems based on like, I don't know if emotional thing is the right way, but either way, it's like not a physical thing. So what's my point?
It's okay. You're saying a person is attracted to certain ideas because of they appeal to him emotionally?
Right, like a scientist could like this this theory, you know, you have the same theory that's correct.
Yes.
But they like it for different reasons. They find it interesting for different reasons or relates to them.
I mean, whereas another person would go into a different, have his interest lie in a different area of science rather than this
right.
area.
And I would say that that's based on, Noam al-Hamba, maybe that couldn't exist.
I see, sir.
Or could it? That notion of the enjoyment of
could
the
be.
Thing,
could be.
Which seems like a, there's a lot of chachma that could be learned from like a lot of throughout. You know, if you read like a huge like fucking scientific like history, but like. It seems like, you know, a lot of developments of ideas have just been based on like, oh, like it sounds cool, I'm interested, so I'm gonna investigate.
Right.
And that started from like
okay.
their interest.
Right. See, unfortunately we're limited in how much we know about this. We about Olam Haba. I mean, we could speak about it in general terms.
But
you know what I mean? But in specific,
yeah.
you know, it's hard to say, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
What channels the mind, what interests the mind, I mean, you know.
Right.
I don't know if we really have enough to.
I was trying to fit that in with Noam and the other thing.
No, okay. I mean, it could be. It could be. That's a point. It could be. That's a point. But I would just say, in a general sense, that the Noam is because you're free of the part of your nature which is an impediment. Okay, you're free of that.
Right.
Okay.
So I guess my question was, is that idea that isolated thing was that. Does that come from a part of man which is an impediment, or is that a different part? And how would you categorize that?
You mean the physical part of his nature?
Yeah.
Comes from the physical part of his nature because he's tied to the physical world.
So that part of man which if you look at two different people, will attract them both, you know, differently to one idea.
Well, I don't know about that. You see, I can't get into that. In other words, why a person is attracted to one idea and not another, I don't know. I mean, that I can't get into. The only thing I could say is that people are attracted to ideas, and they also are attracted to physical pleasures.
In theory, if it was just purely like about mind, and interest in that stuff, wouldn't be relevant at all.
Okay, I mean, that could be. That could be. But I don't know. You know, that's just, I don't have enough knowledge to know why a person is attracted to one idea and not another. That I can't say. Okay?
Okay,
but the idea of being attracted to ideas, that we notice that people are attracted to ideas. Okay? And that attraction is a different kind of attraction than a person has when he's attracted to physical pleasures.
And that...
That comes from two different sides of his attraction.
That attraction will exist in Om Hava?
The attraction to ideas?
Yes.
That's the only thing that will exist. But the attraction to physical enjoyment will not exist. Only the attraction to ideas.
So my thing is I don't see as now why that, you know, because it seems like that could have been, you know, a kid who was raised differently as attracted to ideas than more so than another.
He's saying that, like, in the state that you are in Om Hava, that state is naturally attracted to ideas, regardless of your state now.
Because of less impediments.
Right.
Yes.
But regardless of who you are now, that state that you're in then will be attracted to ideas.
Right.
Right. Right. That's all.
And I guess the, you know, whoever's on, there's different levels, so.
Right. Okay, yeah, that's true. That is true.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
But this, that's all he's saying at this point. Okay? Okay. So then the Rambam says like this. The Rambam says, Peron HaRishayim, okay, and this is the Rambam Shita, that the punishment for Rishayim is Shelo Yisku L'Chayim Elu, Ela Yichrisuv Yamusu. This is the Rambam Shita. It's again, other Rishonim held differently, okay? But the Rambam Shita is that there is no superadded punishment. In other words, that a person that gets kares, it doesn't mean that he received some kind of additional punishment. But the punishment is that he just ceases to exist. He does not get the next world. That's his punishment. There is no superadded thing that he's received some kind of painful experience. Okay? So that's what the Rambam says. That is the punishment for Rishayim. He just ceases to exist and he loses out on that world. Okay? He says like this: B'chol mi she'eino zochel l'chayim elu, okay, whoever is not, does not merit this life, this next life, hu hames, this is the dead, okay, she'eino chai le'olam le'olam, who does not have eternal existence, ela nichras berisho, he is cut off in his wickedness, okay, ve'avad kebehema, and he perishes like a behema, okay, like a animal, like one of the animal kingdom. He perishes, that's it. And his life does not continue eternally. Okay, so that's the kares, and that is the punishment for the rasha, that he just, his end, he ends in the same way as one of the animal kingdom. And he does not partake at all in a continued existence. Okay? So that's the Rambam Shita. Clear. Okay? Then the Rambam says like this. Okay? The Rambam says, Vizehu kares. This is what the Torah means when it says kares. No magical thing. It just means he ceases to exist once he dies. And he doesn't get any continued existence in the world of the non-physical, in the world of the next world. He says, Zehakaris akasuva b'Torah shenemar. Hikares tikares hanefeshahi. Okay, so the pasuk says, Hikares tikares hanefeshahi. This nefesh is cut off. The Rambam says, Mipi hashmua lamdu. Hikares, it says, Hikares, he's cut off. Ba'olam hazeh, tikares, the second use of the term is la'olam haba. So why did the pasuk repeat hikares tikares? Because it means he's cut off in this world and he's cut off in the next world. Okay? I'm not sure exactly what are these two right? I mean, the way the Rambam set up till now, very simple. The punishment of the Rasha is that when he dies, that's it. He doesn't go on. That sounds like one karis, okay? But then the Rambam says two karises. Okay, so maybe you'll say he just means whatever, he's just explaining the pasuk, but it's the same idea. He's cut off when he dies. The Rambam goes on, Kolomar, Sha'osa ha-nefesh, Shapirsha min ha-guf, that soul. Yeah.
So the, what does that mean that he's cut off in this world? Like,
that's right, that's what I want to know.
Yeah.
Right. So he says, Sha'osa ha-nefesh, Shapirsha min ha-guf, that nefesh that departs from the body, ba'olam hazeh, in this world, eina zoche l'chay olam haba. It does not merit chay olam haba. Elagam, now he says like this, elagam mina olam haba nechasa. He says, also from olam haba, he is cut off.
So it's almost like the fact that he doesn't have olam haba is like, cuts him off from this life. So it's almost like this life is dependent on Olam Haba.
Yeah.
I mean, what well, I mean it's useless if he doesn't have Olam Haba.
Yes.
Like, what is he doing here anyway?
Okay.
He's living.
But I'm saying, what is he accomplishing?
He's an animal, hasn't it?
Saying, it's the same thing.
So what?
You have no end afterwards. I mean, you died, and whatever you did here was nothing.
What do you mean by nothing?
Meaning, we say that your actions that you do here are for your, you know, perfection, and then eventually it leads to your Olam Haba, which you then perfect what you worked on over here, right? So if you are Chayav Karis and you have nothing afterwards, so then what are you doing here? Like, what are you accomplishing?
Exactly, you're just like an animal. To whatever value you give to the work of an animal, it's the work of this guy.
And then from like an individual standpoint, at least to like experiences, I guess. Right?
You mean
like we learn that there is like something to like, you know, this world, you know what I mean, like you know, whatever, like we're trying to be paid in this world, like be at least told that it's a payment, like their experiences, like they're getting something, whether even if it's little.
Okay.
It's not like worthless.
Not worthless. Okay.
What are the two things that are
ultimately worthless, yes.
And this is the end of the line.
Where is
it's in Shmini, what is it, Halacha Gimel, I think. Perek Shmini, in Hilchas Tshuva. Because he is saying, right, that it's, he's saying there's the Karis is in this world also because there's no purpose.
Right.
And you're saying there may be no purpose, but hey, the guy's alive. I mean,
yeah.
Got something.
Yeah.
Rather be alive than dead.
He's saying that we're cut off from this world.
Yeah.
Right? So I was thinking maybe it means that it's true that there's an ultimate existence in Olam Haba, but there's a benefit in terms of the existence in Olam Hazeh too.
Right.
So maybe you're cut off from that.
Okay. You're cut off from that.
Maybe he is talking about Olam Hazeh. Not because you're not going to get Olam Haba, and therefore, in other words, there's a benefit to the life we
that's
hold
right.
that, I think. Right? Isn't that?
That's right.
We hold that. It's a better life, and it's Derechad Darinam.
Right.
So that means that if a guy, you could have Karis on this world too, but that's what you're cut off from.
That's what you're cut off from, okay? Okay, so in other words, the benefits and the purpose of this life disappear now.
Which has value without the next life.
Which has value even if you have no next life. Okay, good. Yeah.
Just expound on that. Like, as to the reason that would be, like, I guess you could ask why, what does it mean you're cut off from this life? Are you dead? Like, are you dying? Maybe it's saying a person, like, it's categorized a person who does something that's karis worthy will not be able to get these ideas that people in this world can get. Like, maybe it's saying he can no longer, like, maybe he can no longer, you know, have these ideas. Now that he thinks a certain way, that he did something that was karis worthy, maybe he can no longer, you know, think like a regular, like, get these, I guess.
So
right. It's categorized as someone who does this, like someone who, I don't know, doesn't believe in God won't be able to attain certain ideas.
Good. And as what I'm saying is, what is the definition of man? See, man doesn't mean he has a certain form, he looks a certain way, he has two eyes and a nose. Part of the definition of man is that he functions with the Tzelem Elokim. If you take away the Tzelem Elokim, the search for truth, from man, he looks like the same person, but that is not man. You can't define him as a man, because there is practically no difference between him and the animal kingdom. He functions to serve his instincts. You see, that's not man. You see, so the Rambam is saying that just like you have no life in the next world, for the same reason, your life in this world does not exist as man. You see, you may exist physically, but as man, you don't exist. You see, and it has to be that way. Okay, because that's part of the essence of man. So if he gets kares in the next world, it always involves a kares in this world. It has to. Okay? Because the moment he crosses that line, he's not functioning as man.
Means he's lacking the
Tzelem Elokim. Because he will not have access to certain type of ideas, because he's changed his nature. Now he is serving his instincts. And in order for a person to have the potential to function as man, he has to have the potential. He has to be open to certain desire for MS. If you close off that part of him, the desire for MS, that's not man anymore. That's simply not man.
How could you possibly close it off?
Apparently you could.
Like,
By following a certain path. You see, and completing that path with a certain lifestyle, apparently you can close off the desire for MS. And now your drive is a different drive. It's tied purely to the instinctual, to gaining instinctual satisfaction.
Isn't that like other religions? Is it meaning, how are they going to get MS if they're following the wrong thing?
Well, that's right.
Are you just saying that they want the truth? Meaning, are you just, when you say they no longer go after MS, are you saying the things that they're doing they don't believe is true, or that they want the truth and they're just mistaken?
That's true. I mean, there are two possibilities. When a person
wants the truth,
a person sometimes could want the truth, but he's making a mistake. He is going in the wrong path, but he is looking for the truth.
People are capable of finding particular truths, but
but particular truth. You see that
you're talking about.
In other words, a person sometimes. Let's say a person is studying a certain subject. You see. Maybe he wants to know that subject.
Yeah.
That's not necessarily a desire for the truth.
Uh-huh.
You see, like a person might want to know a subject because it'll give him a certain stature.
Uh-huh.
It'll make him, give him a certain stature or give him a parnasa. A person could study something because he wants the information, you see. But there's another desire. Sometimes a person wants the information, but it's part of a broader desire for the truth.
Lishma?
Lishma. Lishma. A person has a desire to know what is true. Okay? So sometimes when a person is on the wrong path, has wrong ideas, a wrong philosophy, it's not indicative of a defect in his desire for the truth. He really sincerely desires to know what is true. But for some reason, he was led on the wrong path. Okay? Because of his conditions in his life, he didn't have the opportunity or whatever, he was led on the wrong path. So that is a possibility. And in that case, you could say that he still has the potential, even though right now he's not realizing his potential, but the potential is still there, because innately he does have a desire to know. Okay, and if you'd change his situation, give him access to certain true ideas, he'd go, see, like there are certain people that are on the wrong path that have crazy philosophy, maybe a different, totally different religion, total kfira, nothing to do with our thing. Yeah, right? And you speak to the guy and you show him an idea, he goes, wow. And the guy will change over again. You're right. This is what I'm looking for. I knew that other thing was crazy.
So would it be
So a guy like that has the potential. He just has the wrong premises. So But there's another possibility. Sometimes when a person has wrong ideas and a wrong path, he is not searching anymore. He's committed to this. And even if you show the guy true ideas and you show the guy exactly, this is crazy, what are you doing? I said, he is not looking anymore. You see? So that's a different, then he's functioning on a different level. Yeah.
That's what he's talking about. Yeah. Where he's...
A guy, that type of thing, yeah. I mean, exactly what the lines are, I don't know. But, you know, I'm just giving you a muscle to give you a idea of a person that's functioning as Adam, even though right now he might not be on the right path, and a person that's not functioning as Adam anymore. You see, he's committed to a certain enjoyable thought that he has of what reality should be, nothing to do with what it is, but he's tied to a certain fantasy or idea in his mind that's unrealistic, and that's it. That's what he's after, and there's no turning back. You see, so that he's not functioning as Adam anymore because he's not using his tzel melkim, his seichel. Okay, so that's what the Rambam says, that kares means he ceases to be utilizing, to be related to the tzel melkim. So for the same reason he has no olam haba, the same reason he has no olam hazeh as Adam. You see, that's why the Rambam says he dies like a behemoth. It doesn't just mean that just like a behemoth has no life in the next world, but he means he is actually part of the... If you were going to define him by what he really is, you'd have to define him as part of the animal kingdom, not as Adam. Yeah.
So with this in mind, if you were to analyze the particular... violations which would make you chayav karis, then would we find that, would it be fair to say that we would find assume that in those instances like that tells you that the person just it totally ruins their ability to see the truth in every single aspect.
That I can't say because as we studied in Perek Rishon, kares sometimes has to do with the halachic system.
Right.
You see? Now, the kares that the Rambam's talking about over here, all I could do is I could show you the idea, but what particulars will cause this guy to be in that state? I don't know.
You have to
ask God. Because the kares in the Torah, the onshim in the Torah, really, like we showed, Perek Rishon, is not talking about Adam insofar as his level of perfection. It's talking about the halachic system.
Right.
So you could have an Aveira that in the halachic system is considered very bad, but insofar as he's concerned, not so bad. Insofar as his perfection, not so bad. Right. But if he violates that Aveira, it destroys the system.
Right. Well, I was just saying...
The only thing we could say is that there is a concept like that of a person being removed from any desire for truth.
Right.
What leads him to that? I mean, you know, generally you shouldn't do avaras because it's going to lead you in that direction. Now, what is the line that causes a person, or which person can we pick out a person and say, oh, that's the guy?
Right.
I don't know.
Right, because if there's certain...
It's nice to do because then you figure, hey, it's not me.
Right. Because if you don't... It's like if you don't believe in God, for example, like you said before, does that manifest itself everywhere? So if you don't have that perspective, then that impedes your ability to see the truth in every single, the ultimate truth in every single...
Right, but that we said also, sometimes a person doesn't believe in God, he still has the potential.
No, what I'm saying, as long as he has that belief system,
then
he's
But again, I can't really get into concrete categorization of who and what. I mean, I'm just trying to answer the Rambam. You know, what can we say from this Rambam? And we may not be able to say a lot, but this we could say. Okay? Yeah.
Maybe you were just addressing this, but are you saying that it's coming from, naturally? I mean, this is Zach's question. Is it coming, naturally that he then won't have it? Or is it a punishment? Meaning,
The Rambam says not a punishment. See, that's what the Rambam says. It's not our idea of punishment. It just means the natural result.
Yeah, consequence.
So if
a person doesn't have any relationship to ideas, what's he going to do in the next world? He's going to be bored out of his mind.
Someone who's
that would be the greatest punishment. Put him in the next world.
You're saying, maybe this is what you're talking about, but let's say someone who eats chametz on Pesach, right? So he's got a purpose.
Right.
So that person, why does he now no longer have a relationship to ideas? And
see, I see that? I can't
that's
say
that. That's what you're just talking about?
Right.
You mean, so it doesn't apply. What do you mean, sort of?
I don't know. I mean, I wish I could answer these questions, but I don't know. The only thing I could say is that when we did the Rambam Hilchos Tshuva Perek Aleph, we said that there's two types of tshuva. Okay, there's a tshuva when a person does a chet, he involves himself in two problems. One problem is he's breaking the system of halacha. That's one problem. And the second problem is when a person does a chait, it's an imperfection in him. You see, it's a defect in him. Now, sometimes I could break the halachic system without having a defect, a defect in terms of Hilchos Deos. I don't necessarily have an ethical imperfection in me. I could break the system sometimes, and it's just a problem of breaking the system. It's not a problem of a personal imperfection.
That,
what's an example? Yeah.
That'd be like, not halacha, but just like.
I can give you an example.
Like the stoplight thing, you know.
No.
Like if you're at a stoplight.
Oh yeah, stoplight. Riding camel in the desert,
like,
right?
It doesn't have any real effect.
That's right. Like, maybe we can think of a better example, but just right as a basic example. Right, the stop sign. Right, a guy comes to a. Is it a stop? Is it the sign or the light?
The red light.
We got to stick to the right. The red light. A guy comes to a red light at an intersection at 3 a.m. There's not a car for 10 miles away. Right? Should he stop? Well, logically, he has to stop. That's it. If he doesn't stop, he's breaking the system. But it's not a personal imperfection. You wouldn't say that the guy did something stupid. There's no cars are coming. Right? If the guy did this 3 p.m, you'd say this guy's an idiot. I mean, how can a guy do this? He should think into himself and see, you know, remove this crazy emotion that he's a reckless person. You see, that's a personal imperfection. Okay? But if I do that 3 a.m, do I have to do tshuva that I'm a reckless person? No, I'm not a reckless person. But do I have to do tshuva that I broke the system? Yes. Okay? So in every violation that a person does, there's two violations, really. It's a double violation. It's an imperfection in him. He has to look into himself. And it is also the fact that he has no regard for the system. Even if the system doesn't benefit him, right this moment, he still has to keep the system. That's a justice. You see, so every time you break the system, you're breaking two things. Sometimes you're breaking both. Sometimes you're breaking one. Now, we gave an example where you're breaking where you could have a case where I don't break the system, and yet I have to do tshuva on a personal defect, right? Like the case of nedarim. I make a neder that I'm not going to smoke, okay? 10 minutes later, I say, I can't, it's impossible, I can't do this, right? So, or you guys forget, whatever it is, right? And he smokes, okay? So he has two things. He violated the system, plus he can't control himself. Guy can't control himself, right? So he has to do tshuva that, hey, you have to have a little self-control, right? To, you know, be able to go without a cigarette for more than 10 minutes, right? What about breaking the system? Does he need tshuva for that? Not really, because there's another way out. If he goes to a bezdin and he's matir the netter, then it turns out, when they're matir the netter, They're removing their meikara. So it turns out, after they mutter the netter, he never had a netter. He doesn't have to do tshuva for breaking the system. He didn't break the system. Okay? So you can actually have a case where a guy has to do tshuva for doing an aveira, but the personal tshuva. But not tshuva that he broke the system. Because he didn't break the system. Okay, so you have examples both ways. Yeah.
And didn't you want to say that also whenever you're breaking the system, even if you're breaking the system without the outright breach of the personal breach, In other words, right? So
right.
If you break the halachic system, but you don't break your personal system,
that's right.
Then by definition, you're also breaking your personal system because in within your personal system is the halachic system.
Yeah, okay, but that's a different personal system. And it's two personal systems, right?
No, no, I'm saying it's the same, but I'm sorry.
Okay, I'm sorry. No, when I was...
That's it.
No, what are you saying? You're asking a question? Or are you making a...
I thought we were saying that in Shir.
No, what? Good. Let me hear again.
That if you break the system that shows that you have a flaw in your personal
like rebellion or something.
Okay, but let's say the red light at 3 in the morning.
What halacha would you...
Yeah, because you...
Sorry. Good. Red light at 3 in the morning. So.
Red light at 3 in the morning. Yeah, so you're breaking the halachic system, and you say, really, there's no flaw, I don't have a flaw in myself, but I'll say, no, the flaw in yourself is that you don't value the halachic system.
Right, okay, that I agree
that
with.
Is,
I agree with,
that
right. That is a flaw, and that's why I have to do tshuva. But I'm saying there are two...
That you accepted the halachic system,
and now you're not
right,
keeping it,
and then you're
right.
Going against it,
right.
So you're not on the
choice. So that, yeah, no, you're right. That is a flaw. That is a flaw, an internal flaw, but a flaw because of the system.
Right.
Okay, so that's what I'm saying, two types of flaws. One would be a flaw even if there was no Torah. Right, a guy can't control himself, it's forget about Torah, right? The other flaw is generated by the fact that you have a responsibility to the system.
Yeah.
Now, you're right, when you break a system, it shows you don't keep your responsibilities, you have to do tshuva and think into that. But it's a, you know what I mean, but two types of imperfection.
But it might not be a perfect system.
Okay, but I'm saying, let's say the Torah.
Yeah. No, the Torah, yeah, that's why it's different than the stop sign. You know, the
right.
Even without doubling up and saying, oh no, it really goes back to your violating the whole system, what halakha could you pick that's so pragmatic that red light is, it's just because we agreed that it's
okay.
For the benefit
very
of
the simple, give you very simple halakha. Let's say kashrus. Okay, kashrus teaches a person control. What?
What was the question?
How could you give, is there a case in halakha that would parallel the case of a red light? Because a red light is a practical thing, so I could see a practical thing, if a guy didn't keep the practicality, it's not a personal imperfection, right? But halakha is teaching you, really, a lot of halakha is perfection. So how could you say that a guy breaks the halakhic system, but it's not an imperfection, right? But I can tell you very simply. In other words, let's say, for instance, the halakha of kashrus, right? Keeping kosher. Okay, so what is keeping kosher? To teach a person discipline, self-control, that the das, his mind, should control his instincts. He shouldn't just eat indiscriminately, but he has to think, one second, use chachma, right? Okay, that's very good, right? That's very useful and teaches a person perfection. Okay, does Moshe Rabbeinu need that halacha? I mean, if a person reaches perfection and his whole life is chachma, does he need to have halacha is the same halacha that a guy who's just starting out needs. It's not possible. I mean, as a person perfects himself, there are certain halachos that he wouldn't need. If the whole Am was on the level of Moshe Rabbeinu, would Tayag Mitzvahs be the same? I mean, it's hard to imagine. Right? So therefore, certain mitzvahs would become obsolete. I don't need this mitzvah. Let's say, for instance, the mitzvah, you're not allowed to ride a horse on Shabbos. Why? Because you might forget and rip a twig. So obviously, these things have to do with the level of the Am. If you have an Am that would be very careful, never do such a thing. The only thing they have on their mind is Chachma and Torah. So they wouldn't forget. So you wouldn't need a takana like that. But these takanas depend upon the needs of the Am. So not every yachid is going to be need every single mitzvah. Every mitzvah will not function in every time for every yachid. Not going to be. Okay? So in that case, if a yachid would break a certain mitzvah that really has no use for him, you see, it wouldn't be a personal imperfection. Okay? If Moshe Rabbeinu ate chazer, it wouldn't mean, oh, his tithe is, he's about tithe, he can't control himself. But it would mean that he disregarded the system. Okay? Mm-hmm. You see, it wouldn't mean he disregarded the system. Okay?
How do you like...
Yeah.
What's that? Anybody could eat chazer and I could control myself.
Meaning how do you determine?
So...
I mean, I can't work out the particulars, but you can understand
Even the example of Moshe, once he eats chazer, then doesn't he need to double back and say, hold on, now I'm violating the halacha, why am I doing
that? Why did he eat the chazer?
Yeah.
The question, but you could say,
you could,
meaning he could really control himself.
He ate the chazer because it was good, it tasted good, why not? Why not eat the chazer? Let's say there was no Torah. Would you say Moshe Rabbeinu should try to institute things to restrict his tithes? Would he institute a mitzvah of chazer because I want to make sure my tithes don't get a hold of me? God isn't attracted.
He's doing it anyway. He's doing it already. He's doing it anyway.
I understand. Let's say there was no Torah.
Yeah.
Would Moshe Rabbeinu keep all those laws?
Of course he would have restrictions. He would eat anything. Then he's not.
He wouldn't do it. He wouldn't eat anything.
Right.
So that's why he doesn't need a system that when can I eat at this time, not at this time. Because naturally he's not involved in tithing. He wouldn't need a regimen to train himself in order to perfect himself. He's not into tithing.
That had to be the premise. That was the premise, that he's not into tithing.
Not into tithing.
Like he didn't say.
So then he's following the same regimen naturally.
Yeah, he's following the same regimen.
So then he's following the rule.
Okay, but you don't need a rule.
If he's not following the rule, then he's not following the regiment, and then he's...
I don't know, you think about it, Go ahead.
No, but there's nothing inherently in chazer that's against the rule.
Right, you have to think about it.
The rule says don't eat chazer.
No,
but why does it say don't eat chazer? But only for the reason of to restrict what you do, meaning you don't go after your desires. Now, under the premise that he doesn't have...
Let's say a person makes a neder not to smoke.
Meaning, why does it say don't eat chazer? It says because... it wants you not to go after your desires. Now, under the premise that he doesn't have these desires, would it apply to him? Meaning, it's saying, don't go after your desires. Oh, I don't have desires, so that doesn't apply to me. Now, whether you could determine that or not, that you can't determine.
That's the mistake of Shlomo Melech. He thought, you know, I could say, this doesn't apply to me, I could...
So it's a mistake of him, maybe, because they do apply to him, so he wasn't determining properly.
Right,
but maybe if he determined properly... You know what? Meaning you have to be under the premise that Moshe is, let's say, does not have these desires. But now under that premise, then he determined that he doesn't have his desires.
Doesn't
then
he know
that,
like,
then it doesn't apply to him.
Tshuva, for example.
You're saying the only reason to do it is for
sure,
his desires, but he doesn't have these.
It
means nothing to him.
Maybe like once a month.
Say that again. Yeah, that's right.
So the Torah doesn't...
Sorry, guys, Taraso Manasso. So he davens once a month. That's right.
So
exactly. If a regular person would do
this
that would be an imperfection.
Right. But he's saying, meaning he's saying it's only against the halachic system and not an iser, like in terms of the personal perfection. Meaning the Torah could still apply, but for the reason of being that you need a system, as opposed to for the reason that you're
breaking the
personal imperfection.
Right. Certainly.
I mean, that could be personally imperfect if a certain person does a certain...
That's right.
But he will be breaking the system. And so far as he's breaking the system,
that's right.
Imperfect.
Right, there are certain things in the halacha are put in there because you need a system. Not because you need this thing per se is what people need. But if you don't have this, the whole system will break down.
Right. I think that's why the donkey and the, or whatever, a camel in the desert. Like, is that, are you breaking the system, you know, are you breaking a personal thing? Like, let's say you're in a desert and you want to ride your horse. So now you can't say that he's going against, you know, he's personally imperfect because there's not going to be a twig, you know. But you can say he's breaking the system.
That's good.
If every single person is tied to the system and they can't break it because otherwise that would undermine
That's good. That's a good example, yeah.
That would undermine the...
the system. Break down the system.
No. It would undermine the... Something like that.
No, that's a good example. I mean, that's a good way to show the thing. I wasn't bringing it out properly with the twig. That right, you're not allowed to ride the horse because you'll rip a twig. But what about in the desert? Right? So why does the halacha apply in the desert? There's no chash. There's no... The purpose for the mitzvah doesn't apply there. Right? But the answer is, it's true, the purpose of the mitzvah doesn't apply there. But if you differentiated, the system would break down. So now if a guy rides the horse in a desert, what is he violating? He's simply violating not safeguarding the system. But he's not violating the purpose of the takana because the purpose of the takana doesn't apply. He's not going to rip a twig. There's no twigs. That's
right. So if Moshe lived in a desert,
that's right, exactly.
He'd ride a
horse. Right. Exactly. That's right. Very good.
I'm trying to remember when there's a scroll, I see.